welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 449. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Rick Cowley.
Hello.
And only Rick Cowley, for Emily is, as we mentioned last week, away to do YALC. Is that the acronym?
Yeah, Young Authors... Young Adult Literature Con.
Conferences.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's up because she is an author. We've mentioned this in the past, but go look up Emily Soda and you will find that she's written a book. Another book as well is coming. So it's a young adult stuff and she is up there talking to her fellow author types. But she'll be back next week. In the meantime, she's left us here. What books have you written lately, Rick?
I'm sure I've written a book at some point. Oh no, my granddad once published a book of my poetry.
Oh, so you do have a book out then?
About like 6 years ago.
When you say your granddad publisher, you mean he has a publishing house or he has some biros and lots of pieces of paper and writes really fast?
Apple at the time were doing a thing where you could like send off images and words and stuff and you could make books using one of their apps or something. This is, I think I was probably like 14, so about, you know, 10 years ago now. Yeah, he just made this book of my poems that my mum sent him. And it was really weird.
That sounds incredibly sweet. That sounds really nice.
It was quite sweet, but all the poetry I write is about video games, and some of it was really violent and weird. And it just sort of felt bad about my granddad reading all this messed up crap that I'd written.
How have I never heard about your angsty video game poetry? Most, like, teens, they start writing stuff about the darkness in the heart of their soul, and you get the feelings deep inside it, and all of that. And you're, like, what? Writing about how, like, Pac-Man is a cutter or something.
I wrote about how I didn't like having my hair cut. That's one that I remember.
What's that got to do with video games?
Oh, that was nothing to do with video games. I'm trying to think of the video game ones I wrote. I wrote something about Shenmue 2 and how it was really bad.
But it rhymed.
No, I didn't rhyme. Don't be ridiculous.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm limiting you to the ABAB rhyme scheme form, and an artist such as yourself will not be constrained.
I was a cool poet. I wrote just sort of random line breaks kind of poetry. That's the,
wow.
There is a video game poetry book, which is what inspired me.
All right.
And it's called Blue Wizard is About to Die. And it's by a Las Vegas-based jazz pianist called Seth Fingers Flynn Barkin. And it came out in 2003, uh-huh. And it had a really profound impact on my life, and I don't know why, but it's always just kind of stuck with me.
Jazz pianist video game poetry?
Yes. And it's all about him taking various drugs and playing different video games and growing up in Las Vegas and playing on arcade machines and all this kind of thing. And it's this very personal, but also very strange look at, you know, retro games and the era of the arcade and all this kind of thing. And it's really difficult to get hold of now, and I actually have two copies because I bought it when it first came out, and then I've got a signed copy from the guy.
I thought I'd done stuff with my life, Rick. I thought I had... I'm a cineast. I'm a movie fan. I've seen lots of these obscure movies no one's ever heard of. I've never heard of any of this, and I feel like my life is somehow the weaker for it.
So the guy occasionally uploads videos to YouTube where he just plays like old jazz standards and then sings stupid lyrics over top of them whilst pissed out of his head.
Okay.
But he stopped uploading them recently, and he lives a terrible lifestyle, and every time he stops uploading, I'm like, oh god, has he died? And I don't think he's uploaded anything in about a year, so I'm really worried that he's actually died this time.
This is a roller coaster, this story. This is incredible. All right, well, everybody seek out that book.
Seth Flynn Barkin, everybody find the book, because it's absolutely brilliant. For everyone, check in and see if he's still okay.
This is superb. None of the news I'm going to talk about now is anywhere near as interesting as that. Oh, well, never mind, we're going to talk about it anyway. So, news this week, we've got the likes of Alto's Odyssey appearing on Android. We're going to chat about the newest Nintendo Labo trailer, which shows a whole bunch of new potential things you can do with foldy cardboard. Nintendo has also been laying down $1 million lawsuit smackdowns on ROM sites. Let's see how they responded. We've also got new releases including the likes of Asphalt 9, the big one from this week, Shin Megami Tensei Liberation DX2, Furista's Cat Cafe. We've got Hold Down on your way. You've got Hidden My Game by Mum. That's a real name for a game. I'm reliably assured Rick's played it, and apparently it's a thing. Horus Heresy Legions, and an interview with the creator of Hold Down and Rimmed Capsule, and how he makes these incredibly slick-looking, very minimal, but quite different games be really good. First, the news. Quick PSA, we mentioned that it was coming out last week today, and now it is today. We're going to mention it again. Alto's Odyssey is out on Android. It's good. Go and download it.
That was easy.
That was very easy. That covers everything we need to talk about.
Sorted.
New news. So, Nintendo Labo, it's been out for a little bit. It's been... I don't know how much of a success it's been in terms of the financials. It certainly captured everyone's imagination for a bit. And then I think, as we discussed, like, people played it for the first week and then didn't really touch it again. At least people in our circles. Maybe the kids are playing it for longer. I don't know. However, we always knew that that first burst was just the beginning of what the tech was all about. Because being as you can just make random stuff out of cardboard, the possibilities are maybe not endless, but they are vast. So, the second trailer, Toy-Con 03 Vehicle Kit, has appeared. And now, it's going a bit racing car drivery. So you'll find a trailer up on the site, and it shows a kid in a shed, and he is assembling what quickly becomes apparent to be steering wheel. Complete with accelerator button at the bottom there, and he's going to do driving games and that with it. And then, he pulls a little ripcord on the side of it, and boom, boosts, nitro comes flying out the back, which is lovely, and it shoots into the air. And then he takes the Joy-Con out of his steering wheel, puts it into what looks like a joystick-style plane controller thing, and he starts flying a plane. And goes, ooh. And then the plane crashes. I'm giving a blow-by-blow here. And then the plane crashes into the water, and everyone's like, oh, no, planes can't go in the water. But he then pulls the Joy-Con out and stiffs it into a different thing, like a control you might find in, I don't know, a submarine or bathysphere or something. And it's got two twisty things either side. And then little propeller things come out the side and point down, and then suddenly he's in this aquatic submersible which you're controlling by twisting either of the things on either side. And I kind of want to have a go on all of it.
It looks so good.
Looks fun, doesn't it?
The interesting thing about the first two kits was that it came with these mini games, but they was kind of pushing, listen, this is what you can do with it, but go to the garage and do the interesting bits with it. And I think that worked for the first thing, because it was kind of like, oh, this is sort of a very good introduction as to what their idea was. This one looks like an actual proper game that comes with the cardboard, because it's a full open world that you get to drive around in, from what I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can like go into mini games. So there's racing mini games, there's weird mech battles going on, there's loads of collectibles to find and all this kind of stuff. So there's actually a game here this time.
Getting a good game out of those little mini things is the tricky part, because as you say, the building is the fun bit, and then I think the game is maybe perhaps a little bit throwaway. I'm more interested in the application that this has with other games on Switch. So, I mean, surely this is going to be usable in some way with existing driving games, obviously.
Yeah, it's got to be at least Mario Kart. There's no way they'd let that one slide, because they've already done the bike stuff for Mario Kart with the original bike steering wheel thing.
Oh, really? That was so, compatible with...
Yeah, after a few months, they made it compatible with Mario Kart 8. So there's no reason they can't do that again with the steering wheel, because you've got the buttons on the side to like pull things out to do boost and that kind of thing. So it should be fairly simple to sort of do, and you see they kind of clearly built it with that in mind, with those switches and things. It will be interesting to see if other games then pick up on that and use it as well, because I mean, they've kind of just negated the need to buy external steering wheels,
more plastic third-party peripherals,
which never works. They were always awful.
Well, the one that they had for the Wii and the Wii U, I think the Wii one was particularly garbage, where it was just literally a plastic, you know, disc or plastic frisbee looking thing, and you just jam the Wiimote into it, and then that was it.
What was the point in that?
And you're just holding it in the air, and that never feels right. Like, if I want to do... I did at one point, I think it was the original PlayStation was the first time I ever got an actual driving steering wheel with actual foot pedals and everything.
Yeah.
And I was playing the rally games on it, and it was hard as hell. But it was fun. It does add that extra level. And this is a proper, like, mounted, even though it's made of cardboard, it is actually mounted to a steering column. So you are putting it on your lap and then treating it like a real steering wheel. And the foot pedal makes all the difference, like, to me.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely cool. Because that's also being touted as, like, a separate mechanic as well.
How do you mean?
When they're describing what comes in the kit, it says, oh, you get the steering wheel, you get the joystick, you get the submarine thing, and then you also get the accelerator pedal. And the keys, as they call them, which is what you put your Joy-Con into, so you can take them out and switch between things.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking that they're kind of pitching the pedal as a sort of wholly separate thing. You don't have to use it with the steering wheel. You
gotcha.
Can do, but you can use it in other ways as well. So I'm wondering, the first thing I can think of is people are already making sort of guitars with it, and maybe you can then use the pedal as sort of a wah-wah pedal or something?
That's a good thought.
So, yeah. You know, there's already
a modulation
different things.
Thing.
Yeah. So they've clearly thought, well, we've got this idea, but how do we break it down into smaller components so that then people can start messing with them more? Which is even more interesting.
I'm already going to start my campaign in that case for Time Crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Oh, God.
That pop-up button is sick.
That would be amazing.
Well, you can see the trailer up. We've been given a release date. It's going to be dropping on September the 14th. This is called the Vehicle Kit, and it's going to be the same price as the other one, so $69.99 or $79.99. So obviously, yes, that's a lot of money for a bunch of cardboard, but this looks like it has a lot more application for real games, which is a reason to be excited. So if you're still interested in Labo, then you'll be wanting to keep your eyes out for that one. Sticking with Nintendo for just a moment, ROM sites. Let's not pretend that we've never visited a ROM site.
I have never visited a ROM site in my life.
Of course you haven't, Rick. That's
right. I have never downloaded a game that I haven't paid for.
No. Yeah. So.
Can we say that?
No, you can say that. Whether it's a lie or not is a different matter, but you can say you've never done it, and that's what you're sticking to. This is obviously a grey area, in so much as there's a very clean-cut thing regarding downloads and stealing stuff. Like, I think it's safe to say that when people are kids, when people are in their teenage years, maybe don't have a lot of disposable income and stuff like that, and as, you know, certainly our generation, we were growing up in the place where the internet, like, torrents were appearing when I was a teenager. Like, the idea of a torrent was a thing that was coming up. So people were doing it without really realizing whether, is this okay? Is this illegal? Probably not illegal. I had an Amiga when I was a kid, and you just used to copy demo discs, and then just games were cracked, and you just copied them, and then Commodore collapsed. And I wasn't aware as a kid that there was any laws to do with it, because I was like 7. So, you know, people do these things as a child, and maybe they don't consider the fact that there are actual people at the other end of this having their livings robbed from them.
There was always a rumour near me of the chip shop. Mm-hmm. Would sell cracked games on PS1 if you had a chipped PS1.
Yep.
That was a weird... I didn't know why it was always the local chippy.
Well, you had to do... Oh, you mean an actual chip shop?
Yeah, no, like an actual place that sold fish and chips.
I thought you meant a place that chipped PlayStations
No. It was the local fish and chip shop.
Right.
Would sell you under the table cracked games.
Wow.
For like a fraction of the price.
Fair enough.
It was just this weird sort of rumour that was going around my school at all times.
I never had chipped PS2, PS1
Neither
or anything.
Did I. No.
With the
whole... I would never do that because that would be illegal.
And you have to, with the other ones, you have to do the trick with the blue tack, with the thing, with the disc case open in order to make it read. You put a real disc in, and then just before it's about to properly load, you whip it out and put the fake one in. And apparently. I genuinely didn't own the... All right, I made myself sound really guilty now, but I genuinely didn't own it. But point of this all is, Nintendo's been cracking down on ROM sites, two in specific, and they have hit them with lawsuits saying, right, take down your ROM sites or we're going to sue you, to the tune of $100 million, which is no small amount, especially if you're operating some kind of mum and dad ROM site.
Mum and pop store.
Yeah, exactly, which you're, you know, getting some ad revenue off and probably very, very little else. What happened was, very quickly, both sites in question, which was loveroms.com and loveretro.co, which we can mention now because they've gone. They basically vanished very quickly off the back of that, which is understandable. That's not to say that there aren't a bunch of other ROM sites. In fact, I think the major one is still alive. There is a major one, which I won't name, that's still going and apparently hasn't been targeted yet. But I have mixed feelings about it slightly. stealing stuff is bad, full stop, right? I am completely on board with this, especially, like, you know, new games which are being published. If you just go out there and torrent a new game immediately, I cannot get on board with that. I do genuinely think it's bad. I don't earn much at all, but the fact is that whenever I go to do movies, I love movies and I need it to stay alive because it's a big part of my entertainment thing. So I insist on purchasing all my films, renting all my films for real. We all know that we could download them in a click at random from some steely site, but genuinely I do think it's a bad thing, because if you want good stuff to exist, you need to pay the people who make the good stuff or they will go out of business. And it's as simple as that. If you like stuff, don't steal it, because there will be much less of that stuff. And then if you don't like the rise of free-to-play and all the other ways people have found out to monetize things, that's a direct reaction to people just stealing stuff for free and refusing to pay a premium price. Like, that's where that comes from, partially. Mm-hmm. So, bad, 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 bad. However, when it comes to really old games, games that are, you know, existing from the beginnings of gaming, when we're talking about the 80s territory, and perhaps these are ROMs that, which is the, you know, the bit that you download from a game. You all know what a ROM is at this point. There's stuff that you really kind of can't get hold of anymore. And that's where it becomes a little bit grey for me, which is like, actually, some of these really, really, really old ROMs, which are no longer being produced, there's no way to buy the ROM, even if you buy it secondhand, even if you find someone with a ROM of E.T. the Extraterrestrial on, you know, the Atari 2600, right? After they dug all those ones up. Even if you find one of those and you buy it from someone, the money's not going to Atari and the game developers. The money's going to the person you bought it off of who found it. So you're not actually supporting the games industry, inverted commas, by buying stuff secondhand. And there's a very, very good chance that you can't get hold of any of these games anymore. And therefore, there's this entire kind of catalogue, this entire library of certain games which are out of license and out of print and basically you can't get hold of, that no one will be able to play anymore. And there, I think, there you have a slight argument for the whole, like, downloading really old ROMs. Where do you stand on this?
I would agree kind of wholeheartedly on that front. I think definitely video game preservation, as silly as it sounds when you actually say it out loud, it's kind of important because it is a part of culture and another art form. And if there is a very real danger of just entire games just being lost and completely forgotten about, and things that, you know, people worked hard on for most of their lives just disappearing, and people being unable to play these things. And I think that's worse than someone sort of downloading it illegally. I would say that if someone's making a profit off other people's games that they've then stolen, that's bad.
Yes.
If they're kind of just saying, like, if the original people released the ROM and said it's free, excellent, but that's not going to happen a lot of the time.
No.
Because some developers will bury it before they'll allow people to download it for free. So if there are websites and places where you can get access to these games that you couldn't get access to any other way, and no one's actually going to profit, it's better to have that art still exist than to lose it completely.
Yeah,
I would say.
Yeah.
Another thing would be that, like, there's games that are released in Japan that you can't get in US or UK, and there's games released over here that you'll never get in Japan. And there's a way it's a way of sharing those games with places that they're just never going to come out in.
It's like with open source when it comes to things like books and publishing. Yeah. So there are certain bits of text that are kind of open source now and that everybody can use the characters because it's past the 70 years or whatever it is and it's officially out of license. So it's kind of public domain. It becomes fair game. And if there's no way to get hold of these games otherwise, it does seem a shame to lose it. Now, companies do make efforts to try and create bundles of games which can then be played on modern consoles. So I'm thinking of things like Sega Collection, Sega Classics, and, you know, Nintendo releasing, or Rare releasing their old games as a bundle and everything. But they often are already, to be in the bundle, fairly popular games that people have had access to.
Exactly.
Whereas some of the weirder curios of, like, old gaming, bizarre stuff on the NES that you've, you know, never seen or never got released outside of Japan. That's interesting. And, yeah, I would never play that were it not for the existence of some ROM somewhere. However, I think Nintendo's well within their rights to crack down on this stuff. And for the most part, especially with anything that's remotely new or accessible, I don't have any truck with people like doing it for, you know, even PS2 games. Like, you can probably find that. That's available. You can get a PS2 game from somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, don't be daft. Like, but if it comes to like Atari 2600 or something like that, or some really, really old system, and it's a really old game that no one's ever played, it does seem a shame to just like wipe out everybody's access to these little bits of history. fuels.
But a quick disclaimer from Pocket Gamer. Pocket Gamer in no way endorses stealing or acquiring illegal ROMs for use in any purpose.
No, we don't. Don't do that. And Nintendo will find you and sue you for $100 million.
$100 million is kind of... It feels and excessive.
That's a lot for E.T. on the Atari 2600. Rimmed Capsule came out in 2013 on touchscreens and merged a bit of the tower defense genre with some RTS strategy with a very minimal visual design. It was something of a success for its creator, Martin Junesson, and he is joining me today to talk about his new game, Holdown. Hello, Martin. How are you doing?
Good. I'm, like, doing the last minute stuff that needs doing.
He's doing for the game, because we should say that the game will hopefully be out... as of yesterday, if you're listening to the podcast, we're recording this a little in advance just to get the heads up on it. So if you see it in the app stores, it should be grabbable at this very moment. Now, focusing on Holdown just for the moment, I've looked at video, I've seen the game running, I haven't got my hands on it yet, but the things that immediately leapt out at me was it feels a bit Arkanoid, a bit Buster Move, a bit like Tetris all fused together. How wide of the mark am I with that?
That's pretty good. It's mostly Arkanoid, I'd say. Like, the Tetris, the pieces are in there, but they're, like, none of the mechanics from Tetris are present, really.
Kept the Tetronomo shapes, but from what it looks like, hold the thing vertically, and then there are these Tetronomos, each of which have numbers on them.
Yep.
And then you are launching a little ball-like character or creature at these, and then they ricochet around the grid, around the screen. And the idea is that every time you hit one of those Tetronomos, the number goes down, right?
That is right.
So it's a case of trying to work out the exact angle where you're going to hit and eliminate every block as it bounces, like, repeatedly. It ricochets, like, around the screen until what? Until it flies off the edge, or...?
Until it comes back up. So you're shooting from the top down, and the ball bounces around and until it touches the upper edge of the screen, and then you shoot again. Okay. And eventually you get more balls, and the numbers get bigger, and it gets... kind of ridiculous.
Right.
In a good way.
Because it's got that controlled chaos look to it. As with all those kind of games, whether it's, I don't know, like mobile, you've got a lot of Bubble Witch Saga and that sort of stuff where you're firing a ball or an object and then you're trying to match them to remove. But that doesn't have the ricocheting effect. You just run up and it kind of bounces off one wall maybe and then sticks and then hopefully it'll pop a bunch of bubbles or something like that. Whereas this really is about the pull and release and then you just watching it like bounce like crazy air hockey puck across the screen at ridiculously high speed. Is that like the strategy of it is about controlling the chaos, I suppose?
Yeah. I think you can get good at it by playing it, which is like, it's always like, it's a lot more fun if you can feel like yourself progressing and becoming better at playing it. It's just not a matter of getting upgrades, even though the game has upgrades, but it's more about you figuring out like, oh, if I do it this way and if like I shoot this corner here or like you figure out strategies that will, it's like any game with randomness, like poker. You can't control the randomness, but you can sort of hedge your bets in a clever way.
With this one, it's about kind of reading the angles to benefit you most.
Yeah, and also thinking ahead, like when once this block goes away, what's the playfield going to look like? Because the idea is you're digging down, you're going down into these planets, and the playfield is always progressing up towards you. And when the blocks reach the top of the screen, that's game over. So you've got to stay on top of that and remove them fast enough.
There seems to be, even though this is a quite different game from Rimmed Capsule and Twofold, which came before, I am seeing a little through line through your games, which is they're quite minimal in style. I mean, especially when Twofold came out, even though it's a completely different game from Rimmed Capsule, really, Twofold being a grid puzzler in which you're supposed to fill a menu almost like of ingredients that are required. So you've got this these like three colors and the screen will say we need 16 yellow and we need 2 green or something, and then there's a grid with these different colored blocks, and the idea is you need to draw a line connecting them, but as you draw the line the number that the value of each block is worth kind of increases exponentially, so it like multiplies every time you connect a line. Which sounds very different from Rimmed Capsule, which is a kind of top-down, isometric, tower defense come, I guess, strategy game, like real-time strategy. But there's a definite like consistency with the colors, with the style, with the weirdly with the Tetronomo shapes, because even Rim Capsule, when you're drawing out, it's a map that appears on the screen. But because it's grid-shaped, there's lots of recognizable Tetris-shaped blocks in it. What's it all about with this Tetronomo? What's the obsession?
There's such a good shape. I don't know if you're like if you're familiar with the Tetronomos, but Tetro stands for four, so it's all the possible configurations of four cells that are like interconnected. That's the set of seven blocks that you find in Tetris that I also use in Rim Capsule, and this game actually has the other numbered cells as well. Like there are two blocks that are two cells and smaller and bigger, but there's such a great set of shapes. Like they're very recognizable. They have distinct sort of characters to them. Like they're decided by this neat little rule set. Like these are the seven possible configurations of four cells together, and that just pleases me to no end.
The purity of the maths.
I got bit by a Tetris block when I was a kid or something. I don't know what it is really, but
so this one feels a lot more arcadey, even though there's a strategy, as I say, once you release the ball, it sit back and watch the kind of destruction take place, which is a little bit more immediate and probably easier to play with one thumb than something like Rimmed Capsule, which is much more involved, and each game can last for like 30 minutes, an hour on Rimmed Capsule when you're playing through a level. Did Rimmed Capsule do well? I'd have to ask for numbers, but did it do well on tablets and portable devices, or was it a case of the extended playtime required to run? Like, was that at odds with the mobile form and function, if you like? And because I noticed that the next game, Twofold, was much sort of shorter play sessions, which is more commonly seen on mobile, and presumably the same thing with Hold Down.
Yeah, I think Rim Capsule was sort of a tablet game, like something you'd play at home in your sofa, maybe not on the bus, or like the ideal spot to play Rim Capsule is probably a long flight. And I didn't set out to make that game. I didn't really know what I was doing, which is typically the case when I start a game. I just decide to make something and then I see where it goes, which is not the best strategy, but it's my strategy.
I should point out, it's just you as well, isn't it? You are the designer of the games. You have other people deal with some of the sound and aspects, but the actual design of the game, it's just you, right?
Yep, and the programming and all that stuff. Yeah.
So you very much get to make the game you want to make.
Yeah, and a lot of the process is figuring out, what do I want? Like, it hasn't happened yet that I sit down and be like, I'm going to make this game, and then I make that game. It's more a matter of, I'm going to make this game, and then I find something on the way that's much better, and I just change direction and try and do that. And I do that, like, five times over during the project.
So how do you know when you've got the hook, when you've got the thing that, like, oh, this is it, this mechanic here, which you might have added as a little extra, suddenly becomes the whole game? Or you know, when do you know when you've got the thing that, right, this is the game, I found it?
It's super hard. It's super hard to know, because some stuff works really well for, like, 2 minutes or 3 minutes, and then it just does not work anymore. So you need the hook, and you need it to like stick really deeply and last for longer. And some of that you can fix with work, and some of it is just like unfixable. Before Hold Down, I've started two other projects that I just couldn't make them work. I felt like there was something there, and I was working on like 3 or 4 months per project, and it just didn't work out. I had to like put them to the side, try something else.
Well, that's the unspoken thing with a lot of game development, isn't it? How many prototypes wind up never seeing the light of day? And people think that, like, oh, it's been a couple of years since your last game or something. You know, what have you been doing? Just working on this one game. It's like, no, I was working on five.
Yeah.
And four of them I just decided after half a year I didn't like anymore.
Yeah, lots of despair and tearing of hair.
But with Hold Down, what was the inspiration there? Were you just like messing out with a bunch of ideas and this happened? Or were you like, right, I want to do something which involves bouncing balls off stuff. How can I make this new and fun?
My three games, like the big ones that are released, all started with like this little feeling that I wanted. Hold Down is that feeling when you're playing like Arkanoid or one of these like old school like ball bouncers, like paddle at the bottom, and you get the ball in behind the blocks, like up top, and it goes
yes.
That's what it's about. Like all the other stuff is just filler for getting the ball up top.
That sounds like it could be like a double-edged sword thing, where if you I feel like this, a good comparison for that I suppose is movie-wise. It's things like Michael Bay, where he yeah. does the awesome three-tiered rotating shot with the middle ground, foreground, background, and it's kind of what you'd call a hero shot.
Yeah.
Funny, jaunty angle, everything looks up, super slow-mo. It's always a magic hour, you know, sunset in the background, like high contrast. It's like, wow! But then he does that for every single shot. So when everything is awesome, nothing is awesome anymore.
Yeah.
So if like that bit where you go brrr, suddenly during Arkanoid, you're like, ooh, that's kind of a high point. If yeah. you do that all the time, is there the risk that it just becomes dull after a while?
A little bit, for sure. And that's where like that added layer of like strategizing, and this game has the upgrades that you like you're finding diamonds as you're digging down. So you, like you can decide like, oh, I want more balls. There's like the short loop of you shooting and the ball's bouncing and you're shooting again. And then there's a slightly longer loop of you strategizing, like, okay, what I'm going to aim at. And then a yet longer loop of you deciding like, oh, I'm going to spend my money on this and this. And hopefully right. it all works out to be.
Are old games, minimal games, arcade games, sort of a major inspiration for you? Because Rimmed Capsule, whilst you know looking quite streamlined and lo-fi, was fusing some slightly more like modern genres, I guess. So yeah. RTS is not like an 80s arcade game, and likewise with Tower Defense. So is your taste fairly broad? What are the games that you go to or and you play yourself or feel inspire your work?
I think I tend to do like the fairly common game designer thing. I play a lot of things, not that much. So like I'll get a bunch of games and I play them for like an hour a piece and then never touch them again, because I'm just interested in like how does this thing fit together.
Yeah,
I don't care so much about what happens 8 hours in, and also like I have two kids, I don't have the time to play games.
Sure.
Unless it's like Dark Souls, because Dark Souls just got its claws in me. There might be traces of Dark Souls in this game, I don't know. There's traces of Dark Souls in everything nowadays. It's in the water, I think.
So, as it's not actually out yet as we talk, I haven't seen the price tag or otherwise. Have you gone free to play with this? Is it a premium game?
It is a premium game.
Okay.
To everyone's surprise, including mine, perhaps. You will pay... It's $4.
$4.
Or
yeah,
I think that's...
$3.99.
Yeah, whatever that works out to.
Which is, I guess, to some degrees, a more bold move on the App Store nowadays. How concerned are you about releasing something that's premium, and how much of an impact do you think that's going to have on your downloads?
I mean, the downloads obviously are going to suffer, because if somebody
yeah.
has to pay, that's just like, yeah, it's like an order of magnitude, or several orders of magnitude, probably. Which is sad, because that means fewer people get to experience the game. But it also means that I can focus... Like, I used to make Flash games back in the day,
okay.
and they were just lousy with ads everywhere. Like, I'd make a right. nice game, and then some, like, the publisher of the games, that's the way it worked, they would just stuff them to the brim with ads, and I hated it. Like, I spent all this time making this thing look nice, and now there's, like, a neon-colored clown dancing across the screen. Please don't. So now... I can do this myself, and I can say like it's $4. It's not a huge amount of money, but still not like it's a mid price level, I suppose. And I get to decide what it looks like. And once you're in the game, you're in my world. Like I have decided everything. There are no ads. There's no extra noise. So I can be. I think it's like the artist in me that is like, this is the way it has to be, because that's the best
yeah.
way. And it's worked out. With my two previous games, we'll see what happens with this game. I might have to like eat all these words and go back and make it free to play, but I hope not.
Well, save that for the Android port. That's what.
Yeah, it is coming out for Android as well.
Oh, it is already. Okay, yeah. All right then.
Or I suppose due to time travel, it is out for Android as well.
That's right. That's how this works, because we're in the future right now. Well, best of luck with the launch that has just happened, according to listeners. And yeah, really look forward to seeing what you do next with this stuff, because we were big fans of Rimmed Capsule and Twofold around these parts. So hopefully Hold Down continues your run of success. So best of luck with it.
Thank you very much.
Out and about this week, let's start with the biggest release, I think, of the week, which is Asphalt 9 Legends. I played this a long time ago when it was in soft launch in the Philippines and it first appeared, and I've played a bunch more of it now, as has Harry, who did the review for it. You've played a bit, Rick?
Very briefly, yeah.
any briefly. And so the main difference in this game between Asphalt 9 Legends and Asphalt 8 Airborne, which was the precursor, is this one starts off free-to-play, whereas Asphalt 8 was premium and then shifted to free-to-play as time wore on. The major difference here, I suppose, is the default control system, which caused a huge amount of backlash when I first put the video up about the soft launch version. Because when you start playing this game, you'll immediately pick it up and try and start to either tilt the device or press left or right on the screen to steer, only to realize you can't steer. In fact, the only two controls you have available to you are a control on the left side, which is your brake, but it actually serves as a drift button. A full-on kind of Outrun-style drift, where you head up to a corner and just press the drift button and you'll side on and you'll just start sweeping around the corner. So the game is steering for you. You don't have to worry about that. Then the other button on the right-hand side is your nitrous. So you can choose when to activate the nitrous boost. That's it. There are splitting paths that come up, so the road will branch off, or you can move to different parts on the track by swiping left and right when a couple of icons appear at the top of the screen. So you can either carry straight on, or there's a jump, maybe in a grayed out button on the left. So if you just like swipe to the left, it'll go boop, and you'll change lanes and go up the jump like that. That's the limit of your steering. When I put that out on the video, everybody immediately freaked out and said that this is a game for casuals, disgusting, smelly casuals, and we hate them, and mobile gaming is the death of gaming, etc., etc., etc. Until they realized you could just turn that option off and drive it like normal, like a normal driving game. It's called Touch Drive, this system, and as I say, you can do it on or off. I've spent time with both of them. I do like doing the real driving. Like, I am a sucker for actually, you know, controlling the vehicle myself. I do want to do that. That's good. But the Touch Drive, as an arcade game, it feels quite good.
Mm.
Do you not think?
Yeah, no, I really like it, because it... Well, you know, I'm a fan of idle games, so I like a game that sort of plays itself, in a way. But you still need to sort of pay attention and deploy your boost at the right times, and drift at the right times to gain boost and that kind of thing. So it's not just a... You're not just going to sit back and do nothing in the game still.
No.
There is still a game to be played. It's just not the game that I think people were expecting.
It becomes more of a CSR thing, which is press the button at the right time to do the thing and win.
It reminded me kind of like Drift Girls, which is a game I will defend to the hilt to the end
this
of time.
This is going to be one of your itchy things, isn't it?
Well, no, Drift Girls is a game where the main game of it was, it was kind of CSR-y, and you did the, got the timing right for that thing, and then the game itself was you actually just had to time your drifts, so you'd get to a point and then there'd be lines on the floor and you'd have to press a button to drift around corners at the right time, release it at the right time and that kind of thing. So it kind of follows that structure, but with the, you can, you know, swipe around to go different routes and get on jumps and that kind of thing. The only thing that's missing in Asphalt 9 is the ability to date the girls who are in the car with you, but
there we go, there it is. The only thing missing is boobs.
Great game. But yeah, no, I think the controls, the touch drive controls are really smooth, and it gives you a chance to sort of look at the game and go, wow, it's actually really beautiful. Like, the graphics are astounding.
It's one of the slickest looking arcade racers around. Asphalt 8 came out of left field for me, because I was never a big fan of Game Loft and their general output being just like, oh, it's their version of Burnout or Ridge Racer or whatever. But no, Asphalt, it was really good fun, and this is also really good fun. It's slick as hell, and if you choose the normal, you know, driving control system, it is still challenging. There are routes to the tracks, they're quite short races for a lot of them, understandably, but the look is great. The nitrous system has got a Gears of War style reload for touch it to activate it, and then there's a little blue area in the bar, touch it again at the right point, and boom, you activate like Mega Nitro. So there's a little skill game built into that one as well. Getting the drifting right is good. The tilt controls, which is what I'm using as default, they work very well as well. All feels fantastic. The free-to-play has been implemented in a sensible way, I think. So you've got one car to begin with, and then you have like six fuel tokens if you want to use it. Once those are exhausted, you have to wait for it to recharge. However, you quickly unlock more cars, and the idea is that you'll have like maybe four cars in your garage after, I don't know, a couple of hours of play, and then when you've exhausted, you know, six fuel pellets in one, you can move on to the next vehicle. And if you keep them all upgraded relatively on par with one another, you should be able to cycle and swap between them in different races without too much trouble. And then that gives you much, much longer time to play. And then when you've exhausted all of those, you go back to the first car and maybe you've got a couple of tokens left on that. people have pointed out that when you play it for like days and days and weeks, because people have been playing it since the soft launch, I think you do hit a point where you get a bit of a paywall. Where people have said that like you just can't earn the money you need in order to go further. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened, but it happens after a long time. It doesn't happen after the first couple of hours, even the first 10 hours. It happens after a long time. We didn't encounter it in, you know, we played it for tens of hours at our end, and we were always able to, when we say we didn't hit a paywall, it doesn't mean we weren't locked out from certain things. We tend to mean with free-to-play stuff, we always had something to do, and that's different. So there was always like, well, I can't carry on this track with this car, but if I go back to this vehicle, I can do this other event, which can also earn me stuff. Because that's the thing with free-to-play games. You have to kind of branch out, like, horizontally, if you like, rather than just going down the one straight path, ascending the vertical. And that's what this game gives you to do. You always got stuff to do which can earn you things. Now, at some point, obviously, they'd like you to spend a bit of money, because it's free-to-play, and otherwise they don't get paid. But if you choose not to do that, there is a lot of gain here. So we liked it a lot. Don't be put off by the inverted commas casual control system. If you don't like that, just turn it off the moment you open the game. And you will never have to worry about it again, and it'll just be a normal asphalt arcade racer. So 9 out of 10 from us. We liked it with the caveats that we have given. So let's talk about something with a ridiculously big title. Shin Megami Tensei Liberation.
Try again.
Shin Megami Tensei Liberation DX2.
Hey.
There's no need for all that, really, is there? What are you trying to prove? here we have a free-to-play game, which is from the Shin Megami / Persona series, and it is kind of one of them battle RPG-esque things. Well, again, like Teen Titans, you were talking about last week, being quite meta, in so much as you're not actually fighting real superheroes. The superheroes have 3DSs, and they are using amiibo to fight each other. This is similar to that, which is the conceit of the game is you've opened an app, and now there's a mysterious man talking to you via your phone app, and by looking through your phone, you can see creatures in the world that you wouldn't otherwise see via the magic of AR. I hasten to add, you're not actually looking at them through AR and fighting them in AR, like Pokemon Go. It's just telling you this, and then rendering a realistic-looking street, and then there's a big floaty Bahamut, you know, in the middle of the screen. And then you do battle with it. And I've played a bit of this, so have you. So the control system's quite Persona, isn't it?
Yes, it's very much that Shin Megami Tensei battle system. So every character has different elemental weaknesses and strengths, and you need to exploit these to increase the number of turns you have. So you have each demon in your party has one turn, but if you hit the opponent with a move that they're weak against, then you actually just use half a turn and can attack again, and you've got to sort of effectively utilize that to make sure that you can keep dealing damage and keep the rhythm of the game in your favor so that they don't do attacks to you. And, you know, it does that, and that is the battle system of Shin Megami Tensei, and it just puts that into a mobile game. So if you like the combat of those games, then you're going to love it, because it's just that, but it's distilled that down to its very core essence of the thing.
Of just summon creatures and then do the fights.
Yeah, and then you can do the... Shin Megami Tensei was always popular for negotiating with demons, so you can occasionally you can talk to them, and then that's how you add them to your party kind of thing, which is cool.
And sometimes they'll tell you to get knotted.
Yes. If you don't say the things they want, they will just say screw you, and then they'll hit you. And it's nice. I really like I've not played it very much of it, but I really like what I have played. It looks very nice. It's captured all the, you know, the quality of the rest of the series, and it's got all the demons that you'd expect. It's got the sort of silly anime characters and anime stuff going on.
It's got the wonky art style where everything's at a jaunty 45 degrees, so you have to read the whole thing on a slight tilt. That's what Persona does.
Half of, you know, the things that you're actually doing, you have no idea what any of these words mean or what they're related to. but if you like that sort of weird Japanese crap, then I think you'll enjoy it.
Which we sort of do. Like,
I love it. I'm a huge fan of the Persona series, although I've never been a huge fan of its combat, but ironically.
Well, that's the thing. See, I've played 4. 4 is the one I've spent the most time with, and when you start getting into the dungeons, into the really, really hard, like, repetitive dungeons that just go on forever and then kick you back to the beginning, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
That's the story stuff I really liked and was really interesting, but yeah, that became a little bit hard work. Safe to say this is fairly thin on story and is mostly just the battles themselves, but That's what it's going for, light mobile game, and that's what it is. We've got a bunch of guides up, by the way, for this. If you're struggling with it, we've dived deep. And so there are some tips on how to, you know, fuse the right cards together and get the most out of it. But free to play, available now. Shin Megami Tensei Liberation DX2 is the full name. Now, you've been playing with cats.
Yes.
In a cafe?
Yes. Well, that concept should not be alien to you. A cat cafe is... It's not a new thing.
Well, I guess the closest we have is where I live. There was a coffee shop that opened up which allowed animals in.
Okay.
That was as close as I got. It wasn't like a specific animal. It wasn't like a parakeet buffet or anything. But they let animals in, and then I think it closed down because everyone was like, gross. So it didn't last that long. But I understand cat cafes are a thing.
I have been to a cat cafe. There was one in Manchester. It's cool. There's lots of cats. There are other people, though, and I don't like other people. But there are lots of cats.
But the cats were right, they could stay.
Yeah. But Farista's Cat Cafe, which is a pun.
I get what they did there.
It took me ages to work that one out. So you have a little room, and then you've got cats, and people come in, and you have to match the cat with the right person to match their personality. They sit and play with the cat for 30 seconds, or a minute, or 3 minutes, or whatever. And then they leave, and they give you hearts, and hearts unlock loot boxes, which will give you items so you can level up your cat so they can work with higher level people. And then you also sometimes have to like clean up their messy paw prints or give them attention when they're not playing with people. And that gives you coins so you can buy new items to add to your cat cafe. It's not a surprisingly new game, like in terms of the ideas that it has. You'll have played something similar to this before, no doubt. But it does everything it sets out to do really well. The sort of mini games that are thrown at you, like the cleaning up the paw prints, they're really engaging and they take sort of 10 seconds. So every sort of 30 seconds, there's always something to do. So you're willing to stick around and play with the cats and stuff.
It sounds like the bits that are going on the upper level of the Westworld game where you're matching hosts with like the visitors, only this time you're matching cats with people who want coffee.
Yeah, it's like that, but way, 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 way more basic.
And hopefully slightly less rapey.
Yeah. I was just talking about cats, man. I just didn't want to think
I'm sorry, like,
Of Westworld while thinking about cats.
That was the funny underpinning of that Westworld game, which is it's all quite cartoony and, like, you know, you're setting all this stuff up, whereas the underpinning of the whole Westworld series is just, like, enforced violence and, like, robot rape. And they're, like, Jesus playing it up Christ. As this, like, fun, casual game. And you're like, okay, we do remember what this series is about, right? Because,
Anyway, cats are nice.
Sure.
And the game's good. I think I gave it an 8 out of 10.
You did.
I would happily endorse anybody who likes cats and idle games and management stuff to go and check it out.
Coolio. So, Farista's Cat Cafe is the name of that one. Now, you heard us talking to the creator of the game earlier, but Hold Down was released this week. We have played a bit of it. You can get the measure of this game fairly quickly. And that's to its credit, I think. You pick it up and you play it for about 30 seconds. You're like, yep, I know what this is. And then you carry on playing because it's fun. So it works out really well. So as we discussed in the interview, there are blocks coming at you, different shaped tetrodynamos, gradually scrolling up from the bottom of the screen. You have a ball or series of balls located at the top of the screen. You just pull down in the direction you want the ball to fire. You can aim it using a little aiming arrow, and then you release, and then bam, you just watch the ball fly around, ricochet off the objects. Each tetrodynamo requires a certain number of taps in order to vanish based on the number that's on the tetrodynamo itself. So if it's got 1, you just hit it once, boop, and it disappears. 18, and you can imagine it takes a lot longer. And the kind of aim of the game, the real like joy bit, as we just were discussing, is like fire it into a little crack where it goes down, 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 slips into a little alleyway in between the blocks, and then winds up at the bottom of the screen, ricocheting at 1,000 miles an hour off like 50 blocks, and then finally, you know, disappearing them all. That's the lush bit. That's the bit you're aiming for, and makes you feel fantastic. And I really like it. Simple and clean and slick and just instantly playable and Moorish. How did you find it?
Yeah, I think you basically covered everything I would say.
Yeah,
I think I played it a bit longer than you, so like I've got more upgrades and stuff. You get to the point where you've got like 10 balls on screen at once, or just sort of smashing about.
I got up to about 5.
The more you get, the better it is. Like, it just gets stupid fun.
Yeah.
And then you can unlock the harder worlds and stuff and levels, which are just super tough. So I've actually been going back and just grinding on the first world, because you can get sort of like 25 crystals, which you can then upgrade all your stuff with.
Yes.
And it's still fun to like grind on as well. Like, it's a game that you will happily play this first level over and over and over and over again.
Because it just feels nice.
It just feels so good. It's just so tight and well made and pleasant and enjoyable, and it's got the little wiggly thing at the bottom which tells you to seize the means of production if you touch it, and all that.
I like
sort
it
of
when
nonsense.
When you only have one ball left, when you draw the arrow, or you like the line which shows you which way the thing's going to fall, it's kind of all wibbly and wobbly, like the ball's terrified because it's the last one. Stuff like that. It's nice visual feedback. It's clever stuff. We should point out it's a premium game as well. This is not a cheapie. I think it's about $4.99 as well.
Yeah,
I don't think it's cheap. So it's a premium thing, and you might look at it and go, well, it's just a like, little casual game, but there is more to it than that. I do think it's really good. We gave it an 8 out of 10, so it's a big tick from us. Very quickly before we bail, the Horus Heresy Legion. So the 40k universe has jumped onto mobile with its own card game. I've played it for about 20 minutes, which granted isn't loads, but it's fairly standard stuff. In so much as you've got, you know, your collection of hero cards, you've got the temporary like attack effect cards where you can pull out a thing, and then you can it's the same stuff you've experienced if you've ever played a Hearthstone or a Magic the Gathering. It's obviously less involved than that, but the same basic principles apply, only it's Space Marines and Terminators and all that kind of business. It's feels a bit less polished than that, a lot less polished, let's be honest. It's a bit ugly. But it works. I haven't played it enough to have a proper opinion yet, but it's out right now. Horus Heresy Legions is the name of that one. And we mentioned it at the top. So, back to the stupid long game names. Hidden My Game by Mum 3.
Yes!
So, what... I've watched the trailer, but what?
So, you know, your mom has hidden your game. You're playing on a DS, your little boy character. Your mom is upset with you playing on your DS, so she hides it in the house, and you have to find it.
God, mom, I hate you! You leave me alone!
There's tons of levels, and they're all super short, but you can lose really easily because there's just so many little different traps and stuff. So it's a point-and-click puzzle game kind of thing. So you got the screens, you tap on sort of a cupboard, it'll open the cupboard, you can pick up an item, and you can drop items in the world to use them. There's very set ways of doing the different puzzles, and if you do it any other way, then you fail instantly. There's a bit where you find a wallet in a drawer. If you take the wallet, you get arrested straight away in your own home.
Thanks.
There's a bit where I believe you can use a broken stepladder to try and reach your game, but if you use it, then you fall over and just die. Or, like, break your back. There's a bit where there's a giraffe in your room, and the hint calls it a unicorn, because... English is not the developer's first language. And if you try and feed the giraffe too many times, your mom appears sat on the giraffe's neck and comes down and scolds you, and you get a game over.
Wow.
It's just really dumb.
And we're up to 3 in this series.
Yeah,
so we've
and it's
got...
it's been ported over to Switch as well, bizarrely. It is the series. If you haven't played a Hidden My Game by Mom game, you absolutely should, because they are genuinely... some of the silliest and greatest like puzzle games you can get. And the third one is no different to the rest. It's still the same sort of stupid puzzle solutions and, you know, scaring your granddad by putting a VR helmet on him and then jumping at him from behind kind of thing.
All right, you may have sold me on this.
Yeah,
this
it's just super dumb. but it's so much fun, and it's so silly, and it's so easy to play as well. And it's completely free. You have to watch some ads. Occasionally if you fail enough missions, and there's banner ads and stuff, so they're kind of annoying, but you know, you can just pick it up, play it for 5 minutes, drop it down. You could never think about it again, but you'd still enjoy those 5 minutes, and I would heartily recommend that as many people play the games as possible.
Okay, so Hidden My Game by Mum 3 out now, iOS. It'll be out on Android soon, but definitely iOS at the minute. Which wraps it up for this week. Thank you for listening, as always. We got a huge influx of new listeners last week. I don't know where that came from, whether our metrics are wrong, but hi, if this is your second time with the podcast, then we're delighted to have you. Come back and join us next week, when we will also be joined by Emily again and have new interviews, new games, new everything. It's going to be a blast. to come and join us for the ride. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time.
Bye.